You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Turn your mic on. No one can hear you.
As far as I know, my mic is on.
It's on.
He goes, I'm talking into it as far as I know. As far as anything, I have control of.
Chris, I'm telling you, I just love that this is our bench. Like this is what represents our bench.
We've been told in this industry, always act like the microphone is on. That's what Greg's doing.
Thank you.
Always acting like the microphone's on.
That's right.
I was my dad yesterday. We were talking about something with the show, and he's just like, man, Billy is just the best. He supports me. And I'm like, Dad, he's
Thank you. That's absolutely not true.
Always with you.
That's absolutely not true.
Thank you, Billy.
I'm glad that you talked about me yesterday. That makes me feel good.
Yeah. I forget how it came up. But Billy's very sincere, and I appreciate him for it.
Finally, someone gets it.
I think Greg is Billy's muse, like Julia Fox was for Josh Safdie in Uncut Gems.
Just like that.
Who?
Yes, I agree with you, Whittingham. I believe that Billy supports Greg so well. And one of the things that I don't want to have happen around here again, Chris, like last week, your father left here enraged because he didn't get to properly promote his podcast. What is on your podcast this week, Stugatz, Greg? Yeah, well, I'm sorry. It happens. What is on your podcast this week, Greg Cody, featuring Greg Cody podcast?
It's with, not featuring. I want to defer to Christopher because this is the most unusual podcast
episode. He has no idea what was on the episode.
We've ever done.
You want to promote a podcast episode that you're going to ask
your son to promote?
I was in St. Augustine.
But you listened to it multiple times because you're a narcissist.
I listened to it twice. It's a good podcast. It's a beautiful podcast. It really is.
Why do you sound so Trumpy when you do the plug?
It's a beautiful podcast.
You even did the finger motion. It's a beautiful podcast.
I invented that, by the way. Trump didn't invent
that. That's true.
I've been doing this my whole life. Describe the podcast quickly.
Okay, just go listen, people, to the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody. He doesn't have a promotion. He wants us to promote it, but he doesn't know what to promote.
What were you doing in St. Augustine? Looking for the Fountain of Youth? What's going on over there?
We did the Fountain of Youth.
Did you go to the Lighthouse?
Did you go to the oldest school?
Some of us in our party did. I did not.
You went to the bar?
Yeah, I did go to the fort, the old fort.
Oh, I love a fort.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful fort.
I feel like once you've seen one fort.
No.
Oh, forts are great.
Yeah, that's right.
We love fort. That's why I live in the Fort Lauderdale area.
Exactly.
I
hate you.
I mean,
he's right.
Oh, it's true. That's why we moved to South Florida. I love a fort.
That's canon.
My dad used to drive a fort.
Chunkiner!
although I never have. I'm a Chevy man.
Chunkiner!
Greg, I went to St. Augustine for the first time a few months ago, just passing through. There was kind of a weird vibe there. Did you get, like, weird vibes going through?
It's a lot of old people. St. Augustine, I think, per capita, I think it's, like, the oldest place in the United States.
Well, it's the oldest city.
I think it's the oldest city with the oldest people.
Rich in history, though.
My wife's texted me multiple times saying we should plan a trip there, and I just never respond to it.
No, it used to. Look, it used to have a reputation for a lot of old people, like a retirement city and everything. It has reinvigorated itself. It's now a very happening place. It almost reminded me, for me, it almost had a little bit of a Key West vibe.
Put it on the poll, please,
what
Guillermo.
What vibe did you take?
Please put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Is St. Augustine a happening place at Lebatard Show? The reason I wanted to get to old people and just generally talking about the aged is because we have two people in baseball that made me laugh this weekend. One of the incidents I will leave to Joe Posnanski, Mike Schur. They covered it very well on an emergency podcast where they cover everything happening with Tony La Russa, which is just amazing. He intentionally walked a dude with a 1-2 count. Everyone knows you don't do that. And then, like something out of a sitcom, was indignant when they came and asked him questions as if he had done the obvious move. Like it was something you'd write for him as a stubborn, arrogant old person just believing in his ways. Everyone knows you do not intentionally walk on a 1-2 count. And he did, and then he gave up a home run. But Posnanski and Schur cover that very well on their podcast. The other thing that I wanted to talk about from baseball, which felt like it was something out of a sitcom, was the reported nugget by Tim Kirkshin that Joe Maddon, to loosen up his clubhouse, had gotten a mohawk, and before he ever got to unveil it, he was fired. And as a nugget, it just shows a general lack of awareness on Read the Room that is so great that you have to look in the mirror and see, oh, look, I did this to my hair thinking I was going to be the wacky guy who loosened up my environment, and I'm no longer the leader of that environment, but I still have this dumb haircut. Nobody ever even gets to see it, but now it's been reported by Tim Kirkshin, and I was just going to hide for 6 months and hope it grew out.
Ugh. It just makes me profoundly sad to think about him getting fired, going home from work, taking his baseball cap off, looking in the mirror, seeing a mohawk, just one deep, long, spiritual sigh. It just makes me so sad. I wish I didn't know this. I wish I could unlearn this.
Really?
It just makes me so depressed.
I have a competing sad baseball story. Which is sadder, that or Robinson Cano appearing in his first in a minor league game and it being a promotion of SpongeBob night? So it's Robinson Cano, a future Hall of Famer, playing in the minor leagues, and he's wearing a ridiculous SpongeBob. Like, literally, their uniforms look like SpongeBob.
I like that.
And there's just a shot of him in the batter's box,
it
and he's
corny,
just like, this is
fun.
My life.
I love camp. Yeah. That was just
but
good
it's Robinson Cano.
Minor league baseball camp. I don't know,
it made
we're
me sad for
about
him.
Robinson Cano
it made
now,
me sad
so
for him.
It was good for him.
Yeah.
So do we imagine that Joe Maddon walked into the office of Angels general manager Perry Manassian, whose name I just had to Google, and he just, like, he's all cheery today because he's gotten them all. What's up?
Yeah, wait till you see this.
What do we got going on today? Listen, I got something for the boys. They're going to love it.
He's wearing the cap at that point, right? Like, he's still wearing the cap.
I'm imagining him not wearing the cap because he's so excited.
No. He's wearing the cap in his office. Then he gets the, hey, what's his name?
Perry.
Perry wants to see you. And then he's like, oh, shit. And then he takes off the hat because he wants Perry to see the ridiculousness that he's gone through, hoping that that will...
A job-saving maneuver.
Like, hey, all right, we're going to give him another day or two because he just shaved... he has a mohawk now, so...
I think the mohawk would have worked, too.
I agree.
Haven't they not lost since they got rid of him? So it kind of did work.
Well, they lost. I think they lost the immediate game after. Did they sweep this weekend?
Regardless, they went on some winning streak after they fired him.
Some winning streak after they fired him.
You can make the argument that it worked.
You've tried to make that argument, even though you don't know what the winning streak is.
Come on.
Okay, you're looking it up now, but they lost the first game after the winning streak. Let's get back, though, to the character who doesn't read the room correctly.
I was thinking of the Phillies, who won every game since Girardi was fired.
Yes, you've got the wrong
red
team.
Red teams.
Yes, very good. Excellent work by you, as always. As Joe Maddon gets ready for work, as Joe Madden's hair is in mohawk form, as he tells his wife, wait until they get a load of this. This'll loosen him up. He gets to the ballpark. He's concealing it, I imagine. It's in a hat because he's got to unveil it. No one can see it. But someone saw it, and Tim Kirkchin reported it, and now Jessica feels bad because she knows this about Joe Maddon, and now Joe Maddon has to stew in the shame of, you weren't just fired, but at the very end, you were a laughingstock.
Well, no, it's like, you weren't just fired, but you got fired, and now you have a stupid haircut.
Well, no, he definitely went home and shaved it, right? Which, that must have been the saddest shaving of a head that there has ever been. Because he goes home, and it's like, God damn it, the gambit didn't work. And now, like, I can't look at this in the mirror every day. So you get the Gillette razor out, rub some shaving cream into your hand, Gillette. And you have to part with the hair on the top of your head, which who knows if it grows back. That had to have been unbearably sad. It
just hurts my soul. Because Joe Maddon is like the wacky fun guy, right? And he did all these wacky fun bits for so long, and he did well with it. Like, he had a reputation for being like this guy that all the players loved because he did all these wacky, cool things in the locker room with all his players. And then he took it one step further, but everyone else had moved on and they were like, we don't want the wacky fun guy anymore. We want to win a game.
You say wacky, fired. You say wacky fun guy. Can you give me Joe Maddon's age? Because before we get to that.
68. He's 68.
Wow, really?
Before we
almost as Greg old as Justin Verlander, yeah.
Before we get to the mirror where Joe Maddon looks at himself with a what I'm assuming is a really white mohawk. The history of Joe Maddon goes from being a trend-setting pioneer, loose in the clubhouse, CEO, smarter than everyone else, leading the Tampa Bay Rays and their coupon clipping team to be smarter than everyone else because they'd always end up in the playoffs even though they don't have the team or the payroll that the Yankees have this year. Joe Maddon was a genius. He goes to Chicago as a savior. He wins a World Series, but some of the luster off of his legacy is exposed. You heard Jessica last week say, we want it.
I take it back.
In spite of him. Regardless. What do you mean you take it back? You can't take it back
with a
mouthful of trail mix the next 4 days later. You can only take
bar.
It back.
It's called an elemental bar. Kate Fagan told me about them. Take it back. This makes me so sad. I feel like Joe Madden's legacy should not be this mohawk. I think it should be the Cubs World Series that he almost lost.
No, you don't get to do this. You were disrespectful last week. Your bid to take it back is rejected. And now I need you to look at Joe Maddon at 68 years old, wondering where did it go wrong as he stares into a mirror with white hair and has made the journey from young man who did it differently to staring in a mirror as a fired loser with a mohawk. And Billy, what he's doing as he stares in the mirror, he's saying, are you kidding me with Buck Showalter? Buck Showalter gets the big ending.
That's a genius, yeah.
Buck Showalter's going to get the big ending, and I'm going to go out as a laughingstock with a mohawk?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't know, laughingstock. I mean, it's 2 World Series championships, 3-time manager of the year.
It's in keeping.
Yeah.
Perfectly fitting.
He's also always looked old.
Has he? I thought he was the young CEO type that was brilliant. I thought at the beginning, him and Buck Showalter, that all of them at the beginning, and La Russa for that matter, they used to be the hot new thing that aged out of the game, except for Showalter, who's still hanging on.
Tony La Russa was a hot young thing?
Yeah, never. With the Oakland A's, when he was the manager of the Oakland A's a million years ago. He was the guy revolutionizing the Cardinals. What do you mean? You guys don't remember this?
Well, the Cardinals, he looked old when he was
Yeah, he had liver spots when he was coaching
for sure.
The Cardinals. Yeah.
And an unbelievable dye job as well. We can all agree.
Yeah, he's always had jet black hair, that guy.
I agree with you that he looks like a young man. I had to Google image search him with the Oakland A's. There is one picture that's in black and white, which is not exactly an endorsement for this opinion. But as a young manager of the Oakland A's, he looks impressive and young.
He looks young in none of those pictures. Yeah. None of that.
You don't think this
He looks like he's 55 years old in that picture. Right.
He was born old.
But he was 30 then, right?
He was 20, actually, in this picture. He looks old. I'm sorry. This man has never looked young in his life. He just has an old face. He actually kind of looks like Greg Cody in that one
picture. Thank you. I've been told that. Yeah.
You've been told that you look
like... He has eyebrows like Greg Cody.
You've been told that you look like Tony La Russa?
I've been told I look like just about half of the people on Earth. Wayne Huizenga, Tom Cruise,
Frank Gaskrack.
Don Mattingly? People were saying Don Mattingly.
I have heard Don Mattingly as well, yeah.
Jeff Loria, the former Marlins.
That one's
Jeffrey
scary. Loria. I'm like Zelig.
Not Tom Cruise.
Not well, he said Tom Cruise. I find that one hard to believe.
Well, that goes way back to junior college.
Yeah.
Those were my Cruise
One person
days.
Probably said that to you.
One's enough, man.
No, a couple did.
I have a question for you, Greg. Where do you think you rank in terms of success of all the lookalikes that you have?
Wow. They're mostly famous. Plus, Cruz just came out with that big movie, so he's back on top. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. Otherwise, I might have nudged past Tom Cruise.
I think you're last, right? You're last it on this list of people. You're
Jeffrey
the,
Loria?
You're
I mean,
the
he's
least
the,
of them.
He's rich. Outside of being rich, you might be ahead of Loria.
Yeah. What's Mattingly done, really? I mean,
it's a fair question.
I mean, he won a batting
he's
title.
He's Donnie Baseball.
He won a batting title. He's
Did
Donnie
he really?
Baseball is not useful.
Yeah, not a Hall of Famer, though.
Greg, I'm perplexed by your Tom Cruise comparison. You said it was when you were in junior college.
Yeah. Right.
Wouldn't like Tom Cruise have been a teenager when you were junior college?
No, no. How old is Cruise? I don't even know.
He's 59.
Okay. That's not true.
I only can tell you what I know.
So he's 9 years younger than you.
Yeah, they also call me Greg Cutie at one point instead of Cody.
So when you were in college at age 22, Tom Cruise was 13. That's when you look like him?
This
you
is know, where his story
I don't,
falls
I don't
apart.
Do the math.
He doesn't do the
not
math.
A mathematician.
And this is where it falls apart. It's not true in any way.
It is true.
That Greg Cody was told he looks like a movie star true. Tom Cruise. It's just the
at
story.
At 13.
At 13 years old, before anyone knew who Tom Cruise was, before Tom Cruise
Dad,
was
Dad, you're
famous,
shaking your head. You just said it happened in college. Tom, when you were in college, he was 13.
I could be misremembering.
It could have been a different time.
The story is totally different.
Be a different Tom Cruise.
A different Tom Cruise is very possible also.
Maybe it's when you were in college, Chris.
I think I was in. I might have been in my 30s, to be honest with you. When did
so
Cruise,
when Tom Cruise was in Top Gun in 1986?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, I'd have been 32.
There's
that
not
year,
a chance
31.
In hell that Tom Cruise in Top Gun ever looked like
at
you.
The height of his prime movie star powers. You're saying that Miami Herald Greg Cody, who was in his 30s, looked like movie star Tom Cruise of.
It's
of,
been said,
Dad. Weren't you rocking the handlebar mustache back in that day?
I forget my mustache era.
I have this picture at my parents' house of my dad at Disney World with this hand. I got to show you this
I've
picture.
I've seen these. I've seen this broom that he had under his nose that he thinks looked like Tom Cruise. All he looked like was a wayward hippie who had no idea where his life was headed and that his wife was going to spend the rest of the time grooming into a domesticated human being because he was a hairy hippie.
I'll say this in Greg's defense. If you Google Greg Cody Young, look to see what the first picture that comes up is.
That's actually very true, Billy, because I just did this.
Thank
and
you.
It is a Reddit post with a picture of Tom Cruise.
Thank you.
That is on the Dan Le Batard Show Reddit page,
appreciate
I should
that.
Add.
That's validation. By the way, I shaved my mustache. The one time I had a serious mustache, the reason I shaved it, I'm walking out of a Denny's one night. This is a true story. And somebody mistakes me for Groucho Marx. And so that's why I shaved my mustache, because I didn't want to look like Groucho. I really didn't.
Okay, we have done this entire show before. Well, you guys, not me, because 3 years ago on this Reddit post, all of these comments are things that have been said in the last 10 minutes.
I have not been here. I have not been here for any of this. I must have been on vacation. This is not a conversation I was a part of.
People have told me when I was younger I looked just like Tom Cruise. And then I think you meant Greg Cutie.
Yeah.
Well, that's just my dad's line anytime
see, so
he goes through the spiel.
It's in print.
It proves that what I'm saying is not just something I'm making up.
What, that you forever have said people used to say you look like Tom Cruise. Yes, no one's denying that you've said that, but we're denying that it's actually true that people said that.
You don't think people called him Greg Cutie?
Moving on, Angel Hernandez says that there have been discriminatory practices as it regards his ability to become a crew chief in Major League Baseball. Angel Hernandez, I associate that name with, and this is saying something in a modern America, judicial incompetence unlike anything in the history of sports. Angel Hernandez is absolutely right and is the worst possible messenger I can imagine for this message. He is right that minorities do not get to positions of crew chief power in baseball with very few exceptions. He is not the one to be advocating for this. He's a blight on my people.
Is it possible that he's really good as a first, second, and third base umpire? Well, and he just can't crack it behind the plate?
His ratings, his, for those people who know far more than I do, I'm doing the eye test, I'm doing Major League Baseball players have more problems with him in his strike zone than any other big league umpire, by leaps and bounds. But the people who run the metrics on this stuff have done so on umpiring, and he is not the very worst. He just has the reputation of being the very worst. He's actually not as terrible as you imagine. But if you ask players who's an incompetent umpire that is a symbol for the strength of the umpires union, because under other circumstances, he should not be employed because he's so much less competent than everything else that's allowed to stand on a field in Major League Baseball. It's an amusing place I find myself, where I want to defend Angel Hernandez from Pembroke Pines for being a pioneer who deserves to get to crew chief as a Latin man in a sport that does not get very often for a Latin man to be a crew chief, but not this one, Angel. Not for as long as I'm alive. I'm going to have to continue to say that you are a bad messenger for this. On behalf of my people, do not let him win a discriminatory suit that says that Angel Hernandez was not allowed to be promoted because he's Hispanic, as opposed to he's incompetent.
Yeah, I don't follow umpiring much, but even as a casual, I am aware of his reputation. He's really bad, apparently. What are the metrics? Like, who keeps track of umpiring quality?
There are people who do it for Major League Baseball, and there was also, I was reading a website that I don't have on top of me. I thank you for throwing at me a look it up while we're doing this show, instead of just looking it up yourself.
Yeah, but I don't know how to go about that.
Yeah, but
thankfully, I have found it. It's a website called umpscorecards.com. And as you mentioned, he is not bottom, but he is somewhere in the 70s in terms of 88 eligible umpires for accuracy with balls and strikes. He's at 92.7%. Worst in the league is a guy named Andy Fletcher, who's at 90.4. The best in the league is 95.8 over a representative sample, a guy named Jeremy Rehack.
Where's C.B. Buckner?
Enough with criticizing umpires. I mean, you're 3 out of 10 as a hitter, you're a Hall of Famer. These guys are 9 out of 10 plus. You know
how
what
much
I mean?
Variance between the best and the worst? That genuinely surprises me. That the best is like 95% and the worst is 90? Wow.
I mean, 90 is pretty bad.
Why? 9
out
of 10?
You're getting 1 out of every 10 pitches wrong.
It's an A.
Exactly right. They're the real stars on the field.
As Whittingham goes through the numbers and comes up with something in the 70s, to say that there is an umpire or that there are umpires worse than Angel Hernandez is not a ringing indictment, does not get to be a ringing endorsement of Angel Hernandez. That there are a handful that are worse than him is not a tribute to him.
Yeah,
it's not allowed to be, hey, there are 9 guys the worst. Can you believe it? Promote him to crew chief. That's not how that one works. I can't believe that I find myself in a position where I'm actively rooting for Angel Hernandez to lose his discriminatory lawsuit because I believe it puts my people back.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Don Levitard.
He, for some reason, would do a Gary Stevens impersonation of the offensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins and the University of Miami. Go ahead. Do you want to do that for the people? Your Gary Stevens impersonation? You want to give people some of that? 30 years in the making.
Stugatz.
What? Who needs me?
Oh, that?
What? You've done that my whole life.
You're going to go to Buffalo and win with Bernie Parmalee? Who needs me?
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Represented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Jessica, are you ready to do your F1 Minute? You have started a new podcast with Spencer Hall that we did not promote nearly enough. And yesterday was a big day on the track. People were excited. You were excited. You debuted. You came on right after the race. I don't want to, you know, Verstappen is one of your favorites. You're always talking about Verstappen.
Always talking about Verstappen. Yes, Dan. Finger on the pulse of my F1 coverage. We had a great debut yesterday, the DNF pod, me and Spencer Hall. Debuting the show, it's
outside of the first 3 seconds, I would say.
Well, okay, let me
those are my favorite.
Defend myself for a second. We're doing it on StreamYard, and so when you like do the countdown on StreamYard, it mutes you, and so I like, clicked unmute, and then it remuted me when the countdown ended. So I had to unmute myself twice. Very frustrating.
She began the broadcast on mute.
Yeah. But you know, it happens. Didn't bother me. I'm a pro. What are you gonna say? I'm like, just, it is what it is. Pro. I am a pro, Witty.
How did you feel about your debut?
It went well. I think, you know, as time goes on, we build more bits and chemistry. It'll get even better. It was an interesting one to start because the race wasn't that interesting. There were some crazy things that happened I'll get to in my F1 Minute. But the race started at 7 a.m. Eastern time. Oh. So I had like a 5 a.m. wake-up call on Sunday morning.
Well, Spencer, wow. I did not realize that he was such a gearhead until he came into town for F1 for Miami, and he seemed to be like just all about getting in those paddocks and really was. I was surprised at how interested he was in F1.
Well, yes. Spencer has been covering a lot of motorsport for a very, very long time. He had some good NASCAR anecdotes on the pod also because I'll get to it in my F1 Minute, but there was an incident with some duct tape yesterday during the race. So yeah, it was fun. We'll be back next week for the Canadian Grand Prix, which is at a more normal time because it's in the Eastern time zone. So probably around like 4:30 next Sunday, we'll be back for the next episode. We need to get some guests on too, Dan. We need to get some good gearhead guests. So if anyone has any suggestions, just tweet them at me. You will anyways. People tweet at me stuff all the time.
Witty, please play the music. People tweet at her stuff all the time. This is just a vehicle so that Jessica tells you that she has a Twitter account that you can reach her on.
She's a business.
I am a business. I have a lot of followers, Dan. I reached a milestone on Twitter recently, over 100,000 followers.
Well,
thanks,
done.
Greg. I've just, you know, what can I say? Thank you to my fans.
Yeah.
They tweet at her a lot.
Mostly to say stop eating on the show.
And certain, you know, every once in a while a Cubs manager follows her, and we all learn about it
Rick
together.
Sutcliffe too.
Go ahead and play the fun music here that makes her the star that she is, F1 coverage and beyond.
Rick Sutcliffe.
Yeah, Rick Sutcliffe and
he
Ross.
He retweeted my grandpa's obituary. Yeah. Now this is going to be in the clip that we post on social media. God damn it. On pole again after an amazing lap in Q3. It's lights out and away we go. On turn one, Checo steals the lead from Leclerc. Baby Lando of the Dan Le Batard Show with Stugatz is battling it out with Daniel Ricciardo in the back. Mamma mia, here we go again. Carlos Sainz runs off the track at turn four, and he has to retire his car. Checo's out in front, but there's a virtual safety car in Leclerc pits. Now Vettel is off track, but he saves his car with a nifty move. Verstappen passes Perez, but both Red Bulls still have to pit. But disaster strikes again for Ferrari. Leclerc is out of the race with engine failure. Is that the championship? Anything can happen in Baku. Speaking of Baku, Lewis Hamilton's back is so f***ed up he can't feel his ass. Lewis powers through and passes Tsunoda, but Tsunoda pits anyways, and his rear ring gets duct taped. Verstappen is out in front. Both McLarens are in the top 10. Lewis Hamilton secures fourth place. Verstappen wins the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. It's a 1-2 for Red Bull. Mercedes is in third and fourth. Ferrari is awarded no points, and may God have mercy on their souls. It was a short one. It was an interesting race, Dan, but not a lot happened other than the Ferraris just absolutely crapping the bed.
Did you guys see that Ben Simmons is now collaborating with Ferrari? Expensive things that sometimes don't work right because just a spark plug is off.
Their entire engine blew. Everyone who was driving with a car that had a Ferrari engine had a terrible race yesterday. All things Ferrari were disastrous yesterday.
Yeah, not great. But I think now we're going to see an interesting end of the season between the two Red Bulls. It's very possible that Sergio Perez could be battling with his own teammate.
Forgive my ignorance here. Does Ferrari have, it seemed like at the F1 race in Miami, it seemed like Ferrari had more people who represented with their gear than other, like it seemed like there more people are proudly Ferrari than other brands. Am I wrong about that?
Well, Ferrari is like the, it's like the Texas football of F1 or like the Dallas
they're
Cowboys.
The Yankees. They're the Yankees.
Or the Yankees. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like an American.
But so why would
analogy.
Ben Simmons be the collaboration that Ferrari would choose from all the things that you can choose from to collaborate? A guy who right now I wouldn't think would have very much appeal to any sponsor. Why would Ferrari say we want to collaborate here? Is it trying to get younger?
Probably because they know people will talk about it, so they get a return on investment. Like, we're talking about it right now, so it's probably a good advertisement for them. Kevin Clark posted the picture of Ben Simmons in front of the Ferrari because it was, like, right when both Ferraris choked during the race. And so it was like, well, that checks out.
Exactly.
But, I mean, there's, like, Ferrari's, like, F1 team and Ferrari's, like, you know, car manufacturers and their engine manufacturers. Those are all kind of, like, different departments, I would assume. Like, Mercedes has, like, their AMG team, and then they have like their domestic car manufacturers, like, and they have their F1 team, and they're all kind of like they all work together, but they're separate things. So I don't know what Ben Simmons's like partnership is actually for. They might have just given him a Ferrari instead of like post pictures.
I presume the partnership is young, cool, and fashionable, right? Like that's like Ben Simmons, for all his misgivings as a basketball player, is all of those things. Like he is popular on social media, he represents something at the moment, like. He's cool and he's fashionable. So I would imagine like in an ideal world where Ben Simmons is a good basketball player, that probably is a really smart partnership for them. But right now, especially given that they had two DNFs this weekend, not exactly the best timing for them.
Well, he's cool and fashionable, just doesn't really work well under pressure. So good for Ferrari.
Once upon a time, also cool, and I wanted to talk about this because he rarely does this. There are a handful of people in sports that when they speak up have so much respect that even their peers shudder in the face of the criticism. Drew Brees didn't walk back some of the stuff that he was doing on the anthem until Ed Reed came out and called him a punk, because Ed Reed is universally respected in the industry as being a professional who doesn't do or say the wrong thing, respected by others in a way that is Hall of Fame uncommon. Ed Reed came out the other day as someone who has not done this historically and said of the Jack Del Rio controversy, the defensive coordinator for the Washington Commanders, Jack Del Rio came out and said, while calling an insurrection a dust-up, that the Black Lives Matter movement and those protests had resulted in more damage and more violence. And he had espoused an opinion that some people in our country agree with. I don't know if it's 30%, 25%, as a bunch of people in Idaho are arrested because they're getting close to a pride event and they are intent on terrorism. There are plenty of people who agree with Jack Del Rio and will now side with the idea of free speech, or why would you punish what Jack Del Rio was punished for, which is Ron Rivera came out and fined him $100,000 for his comments that were either racial slash political, in any event, strange to hear a defensive coordinator get out in front of microphones as if he's not aware of anything happening in his locker room or his workplace and lean into saying something that, if nothing else, cost him a $100,000 fine because Rivera can't have his black players thinking that their defensive coordinator is somebody who's that tone deaf. So I'm not even sure he's being fined $100,000 for what he said as much as the damage of that. But I've never seen it. I've never seen a head coach fine an assistant coach that amount publicly. And whether I agree with what Jack Del Rio said or not, and I don't like it as a precedent. I don't like Ron Rivera deciding for me or us, because he's the only credible person in that organization, what it is that is finable on one of his assistant coaches. I wouldn't want to be an assistant coach working under those rules where you got to send out your one credible guy in front of everybody to fine him because what? The league can't? The league can't? Snyder can't? Because you've got all sorts of problems in ownership with the Raiders. Now Spanos is being sued over here because that ownership is in disarray for misogyny and everything else. I don't want these people deciding moralities of any kind for me. I would like for them to all sit that stuff out and me to be able to make my discerning judgments about what it is that happens in those places. But I understand why it is that Rivera had to do that in his locker room to Jack Del Rio. And I think it's precedent setting. Like, I really don't, I cannot remember, I haven't looked it up, but I can't remember a head coach ever doing a fine of that size. That's like a tenth of your salary. Like, I've never heard of such a thing. And no matter how much I think he deserves it, and Ed Reed says it should be more. Ed Reed says he wanted more than $100,000 and now wants players for Washington to take a stand of some sort against Del Rio.
I do think that, I mean, Ron Rivera is not necessarily deciding for us. I do think he's deciding for his organization, right? For his locker room, and even for his sensibilities, right? When you step out, and if he tweets those comments, it's one thing. If you step in front of the Washington Commanders logo, in front of the logos of the Washington Commanders sponsors, and say everything that you said on Twitter, that's a completely different thing. You are speaking at that point on behalf of the organization because the backdrop is behind you. So that's probably what he's being fined for. I do wonder how much armament it does give to the other side in terms of, well, you can't say these things. You can't disagree with what is acceptable in public without getting
honest,
fined.
These aren't honest arguments,
of
though.
Of course, like, right. It just never is on the level, but that's they argue things in bad faith. It is someone espousing a viewpoint that is representative of the Fox News audience, the OAN audience.
But not what he's being fined for. Not what he's actually being fined for. Like, they can say what they want. The thing he's actually being fined for is what Whittingham mentioned with what I'm mentioning, which is it's $50,000 for, hey, we got black dudes who work for us, and it's $50,000 for you do not do this in front of our sponsors on the company letterhead, where opinion of any kind like this, or on the, just no opinion. We don't need any opinions from you in this realm when it's around our sponsors. But what can be objected to on the other side is, this is vastly more likely to get this punishment than anything that he could say on the other side. Anything. There's only.
But yeah, because what is the other side of this? Like, there isn't another side. That's the argument.
I know, but we're having this discussion that is not a good faith argument with, like, hey, there are two sides, and one of the sides is saying there are two sides, and the other side is saying there aren't two sides here.
Because
there's one correct
truth,
side.
And there's facts, and then there's all the other made up things that people believe in. And the truth is that there was, like Mike eloquently explained on last Thursday's show, there was an attempt to invade the Capitol and overturn election results while they were trying to certify the election. That is a fact. Like, I don't know if you watched the hearing on Thursday night. There's going to be another one today. Congress has done an extensive investigation on this, and they have laid out all the facts for us. And you can keep watching the news as these hearings go on for the next month if you want more information on that. But that is not something that you can argue as, you know, a point of view or an opinion.
No, but you can take another side when you take selective facts or alternative facts, yeah, and create another side where there are no two sides.
That's fine. And if you want to say it at your workplace, you might get reprimanded for it. And the way to, you know, punish him, I guess Ron Rivera decided the best way would be to fine him rather than suspend him from work without pay, rather than whatever, you know, fire him. There are other punishments he could have taken. I think this is a pretty like medium step where they find him and they're going to donate this money to some like Metro Police charity or something like that. I can't remember what it was called. But if he had gotten fired like that, you know, that would have been a big deal too. But he didn't even lose his job over this. He's just getting fined, and he makes probably seven figures or more. So I don't really see like what the argument is against it.
This is a very prominent assistant coach, one of the biggest name assistants in the league, representing the team situated in the region where this insurrection happened. Six people died related to this insurrection, and for him to refer to it as a dust up and then not walk that back sufficiently or immediately, it really was off-putting to a lot of people. And I think the head coach of the franchise has every right to represent the best interest, the image of his franchise. And believe me, no few franchises have taken a public image hit more than Washington has from the nickname on down. But in this case, no, I don't want one of my prominent assistant coaches out front with stuff that he's saying.
I agree with everything you're saying. The part that I disconnect from you guys on is, why do you think this is the first time we've seen something that a coach hit someone who's an underling with this kind of fine? You guys are saying, yes, I want him punished. Ed Reed is saying more. This is the reason that I don't want these guys involved with any of it. Because once he punishes him once, Ed Reed is saying more. And I don't know where the line should be. I'm asking you, the audience, everybody, hey, don't you find it curious that you've never heard of a head coach coming in and dropping a $100,000 hammer on an assistant coach for something that's been said? Don't you find that part curious? I feel like everyone in this room can agree with, yes, wrong, 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 and we can disagree on how much to punish. I've been a bit of an absolutist. I want football out of all of this shit. Like, all of it. I don't want Ron Rivera or that organization, anybody running that organization, to be telling me what's right morally when we just had to threaten with the sponsors that guy to change his racist name. And Commanders now still sounds like something out of Proud Boys.
But that's a contradiction in itself if you want all of this separate, but then you're going to say that the name's racist. Because by your argument, then you wouldn't be able to change the name because you'd want to keep it separate. There is no separation of these things.
I'm asking you the precedent of it. Well, you happen to agree with it. We happen to agree on this one time. Yeah, fine. Fine him. What do you make of the fact that we've never seen it before? In all the time we've watched sports, I've never heard of a $100,000 fine where a coach comes out and says, I'm not going to fire him. Now, a coach comes out and says, nope, my assistant coach, I'm taking $100,000 away from him. And instead of making this what it already was, which is 3 days in the news stream with no action, we've got an owner off to the side and a leaked investigation that threatens to bring down the top of the NFL has already taken out Gruden. This guy, as an assistant coach, is coming out there. We need to send a message to this employee that this will not be tolerated. And so here's a hammer that you have not seen. A $100,000 sickle dispensed as punishment from a head coach that I talked to my executive friends. They've never seen this. They've never seen a head coach with the power to do this. Ron Rivera's not in charge. They got a GM. Ron Rivera's not in charge of this football operation.
But I don't understand. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's never happened before. I would venture to guess that coaching staff members have probably been punished at some point in the past by the head coach because they've done something out of line and either been suspended without pay or whatever, which is like sort of aligned with a fine. Because if you get suspended without pay, the company's keeping your money. This is a fine that they're then donating to charity. I don't know. Like, is that a bad thing though? If now you are being held to a higher standard because you're a public figure.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying I've got my discomforts with once you open this slippery slope, allowing the next coach I don't trust to be able to make stuff, to be able to make up his own rules because there are no rules here. I'm asking the group to examine, hey, isn't it curious that you've never seen this before. And if you've seen it done in private, they didn't do this in private. They couldn't do it in private. They had to go out there and shame him with an amount of money that would get your attention. And I don't think enough people are talking about, well, this is curious. I haven't seen it before. I haven't seen a coach with this kind of power in an organization that lacks so much credibility that they got to bring out the only guy in the organization who has credibility to dispense punishment that we haven't seen before from a head coach.
But there are a lot of factors here, right? As you mentioned, it's within this community, Greg, that this happened, right? The charitable donation is to the United States Capitol Police Memorial Fund for some of the police officers that died that day. So there are a lot of reasons why, in this particular instance, it made sense within this community to act this way. However, I do understand what you're saying, which is similar to how, you know, the United States Congress under Donald Trump towards the end of his presidency impeached him twice. And as a result, if the U.S. House of Representatives flips in these midterm elections, the Republican Congress has basically promised to start impeaching everyone within the Democratic hierarchy because that's their form of retribution. Is there a form of retribution that comes from a coach who leans on the other side politically, someone within their organization says something he disagrees with, and fines them as a result? Or you're basically saying, in this particular case, it made sense to find Jack Del Rio, but you're not saying that political speech inherently is like, what would you say the crime here is? The crime here is pissing off the customers, pissing off the fan base, pissing off your players,
your locker
people
room.
Who work within your organization. But that's not a specific thing that you can track, right? You can't say you did this, therefore you get this fine. This is a case-by-case basis. Analyzing whether or not you want to find someone. Though,
for the record, to me, as I examine this, they didn't say that part. Whittingham, the part you and I are saying is not what's coming out in the statement. It's not like, hey, this is really offensive to my players. This is really offensive to my sponsors. Can't have it. That's not what the statement from Ron Rivera was, that the fine was about the fine.
Yeah, but he's not going to admit that sponsorship ire is in the middle of this. I mean, that sort of goes without saying.
What do you make of Ed Reed saying that's not enough? Now it needs to be more. That 100. What is the right amount? Where do I put the correct amount on this?
Well, I think Ed Reed is saying that like there has been very little progress since the protests after the George Floyd murder, and people are still getting away with comparing what was a civil rights movement to an insurrection, and like that's not okay. And this is where I think you do kind of have to punish Jack Del Rio, because at what point do his political opinions that he's saying publicly affect the ability to lead the people that he's supposed to on his team? It's a personnel issue. Like
it might have affected them irreparably. Like I wonder if any defensive player on the Washington Commanders is going to respect Jack Del Rio in the same way that they did before this happened. That he might have irreparably caused himself damage within the organization, that maybe he gets fired after the season or even sooner because he's unable to coordinate this defense and get them to listen because of what he said.
Right. And at what point is enough enough? Like I understand like the hypothetical situation you're creating in which like, you know, 6 months from now after midterm elections, the political tides change and now people who are saying things that are factual are getting fined. But I don't think like you create a hypothetical situation in your head and then decide that that's a reason for not doing something right now when someone is blatantly spewing lies in front of, you know, the logo for your organization and doing things that are going to damage his credibility within the locker room.
You say that obviously you punish it now. What do you make that for 2 days I didn't hear people calling for punishment? And it looked like it was just going to be noise until Rivera decided, well, I guess I've got to handle this. And I'm guessing for 2 days they spent talking, who's going to handle this? Who's going to get out and punish this? What are we going to do? Oh, Ron, would you please do it? You've got credibility. Nobody has a problem with you. You seem like leader guy. We need head coach to be face and voice of a team here. Ron, we need to punish this because it didn't happen immediately, Jessica. It stewed and festered for 2 days before anybody punished it. And I think it's because they didn't know how to handle it. And I think it's because they got to go because there's no precedent for handling it. Like what you call Goodell? Hey, Goodell, do you want to make this worse? By handling it, why don't you invite this problem?
There's no precedent for handling it because for decades, the players in the locker room just had to put up with the bigoted beliefs of a lot of the coaching staffs, I assume. So, like, yeah, like, there's the tide has shifted. The players in the locker room shouldn't have to deal with someone that they're made uncomfortable by because he's saying that.
But they still have to deal with him now. He's still there. Right. He's just at a 10% pay cut.
I wonder if they discussed whether or not they could fire him over this, or if that would open them up to a lawsuit for, you know, a discrimination lawsuit against Jack Del Rio. I don't really know. I don't know what happened in the locker room in the days after the comments. I assume Jack Del Rio knew he was in some deep shit immediately because there was a lot of outrage on social media. And I did see people on social media calling him for get fired. Social media is not necessarily a reflection
of the real world,
real life.
That's
but
not.
I do think it's indicative of where a lot of media members do sometimes shape the opinion on it. But that's because they also are people.
This is where I get uncomfortable, though. The hypothetical opinion where you put together these ingredients, a person I don't agree with, and now the mob that gets to move on social media like this. The hypothetical that I'm putting in front of you where all of us agree on the idea of don't do that. What is the matter with you? Like you, that's wrong. And now we're talking about degrees that you punish the wrong, and do you punish the wrong? But I can't invent the hypothetical on the other side that would piss me off to no end. I can't imagine it, the hypothetical where there are people conspiring on the other side of this. And now we've set all the precedents because we can't go back and undo that Ron Rivera is in charge of morality on this subject for us, because the Washington team doesn't have anybody else who can do it.
And chances are Ron Rivera felt very strongly about it, right? Chances are he spent 2 days talking to his legal advisor saying, hey, am I allowed? This is a free speech thing. Am I allowed to fine my coach $100,000?
I should fine him $100,000 just with the time wasted on having to address this with my legal team in private, because you're wasting company money and time on, I have to address my defensive coordinator said what near the Capitol with sponsors behind him?
And he's causing a distraction, which is probably impeding his ability to do his job. So I do think it comes back to it being like a workplace relations issue. And this is people's workplaces. It's no different than if something like that happened here. You would have to deal with it internally and figure out what to do.
Yeah, I do wonder if what Del Rio said was said by somebody on ESPN or was said by a college university president, there would be repercussions. Right? I mean, this isn't just one coach being singled out.
What are repercussions? He gets to keep his job. Like, if we're going to go down the path of punishing and you're going to make it just $100,000, as I ask you again the question, Ed Reed says it should be more. If you're in the range of my head coach has to get out there and fine you $100,000 so that we can get this noise away from our logos and sponsors, how far are you then the next step of firing him because he's disposable? Like, you don't need this in your locker room. You can get any defensive coordinator to go be Jack Del Rio. Who isn't this in your locker room? Once you get to $100,000 on the penalty, why are you keeping him?
That's a good question.
You can just wait until Washington loses like 10 games this season and then fire him too.
Rivera will go with him. Another season. He'll be right out the door with all his morality. And you know who's still be in charge? Snyder.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.